Don't Blink, Season 9, Episode 7, The Zygon Invasion.
Hello, sweetie. Welcome to Don't Blink, a fan podcast dedicated to Doctor Who. Grab your bow ties, 3D glasses, and sonic screwdriver and come along for some timey-wimey adventures across the Doctor Who universe. And now, here are your hosts, David and Jeremy.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm David.
And David, you visited witches in Salem last week, is that right?
I did, yes. Thank you so much to Ruthie from Golden Spiral Media for stepping in and hosting the show, co-hosting the show last week. I was in Salem, Massachusetts, which also briefly appeared, if you had eagle eyes, in this week's episode of Doctor Who. But I was there with my wife, and I was dressed as Tennant and Peter Capaldi, and she was dressed as Missy. So if you were up in Salem last weekend and you saw us wandering around, that was us.
Yeah, I saw your Capaldi outfit with the black shirt and the stars on it. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a comfortable outfit to wear. So
is it really?
Oh, it's so snug and comfy. A nice Paul Smith sweater. So it was a lot of fun. And I was walking down the street the first morning I was there, and I passed a family, probably of six or seven of them on vacation. And there was a little girl, and she had the fez and the bow tie and the tweed jacket. And she was probably like 6 or 7 years old. And I walked by her. I gave her the finger snap and said, "Nice bow tie." And she just freaked out. Yelled, "Oh my God, it's the Doctor!" So it's my favorite time of year.
Yeah, and you were as Tennant or Capaldi then?
That was Capaldi. So she knew her stuff, because that's a harder costume to recognize. So
yeah,
but it was a lot of fun, and I hope everyone out there in our listenership had a great Halloween.
Yeah, I didn't do anything. We watched the World Series. So. Passing out candy and watching the Royals represent flyover country. So.
And they were playing the Mets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was happening up where I was in New York. I was there just this last weekend. So, yeah.
World Traveler David is back with us again. So.
It's not as glamorous as it sounds, I assure you. I take the bus.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into our host ratings for this week. David, what did you give it this week?
A pretty comfortable 9. 9 electric wigs.
Oh, wow. So you could say it was a snug fit, huh?
Yes, like your exactly. Sweater. Very much like my sweater, yeah.
All right. 9 is pretty good. I actually gave it an 8. References to the Doctor's past because of all of the little Easter eggs we had this week.
There was some terrific, yeah, right from the off. Osgood is definitely representing, so she's...
Yeah, she had like 6 of the 8, so... Between the scarf, the bow tie, the question marks, she was just dressed in a ton of little Easter eggs, and I thought that was great. It was definitely good to see Osgood again too.
It really was, and I, as grumpy as I was that they're bringing her back, and you know that they killed her. Like Moffat can't kill anyone. Clearly, yes. They always come back,
except for red shirts. He's good at killing red shirts.
He is good at killing red shirts. I had a feeling that I would really enjoy this episode, and I don't know quite why, but I've been sort of waiting for Moffat to come back with something like the Impossible Astronaut that has that scale and that does that set PC thing and that sort of clever scripting thing. And this just, I really did enjoy it. And it was obviously, there's a lot of politics that we can talk about, but I think that the internet seemed to love this episode too.
Yeah. It received pretty good ratings from what I can tell. I think it had a decent audience share in the UK, which was like 19%, but which is a little down, I think, over the last couple of episodes, but still did pretty good job, and it did get pretty good reviews for the most part. So I think 8s and 9s are pretty fair.
Yeah, Doctor Who is on the ropes a little bit with the ratings. It's such a strange thing because it's this global phenomenon, and everybody now recognizes it. It's leveled up again, I think, since Capaldi's been in it. But in terms of the actual sort of physical ratings of people who are sitting down in the UK and watching it, it is on the slide. And I assume it's just because it's on so late at night. I mean, when I was a kid, it was on, I think it's 6 o'clock. Now it starts at 8. So the younger ones must be missing out. I don't know. But the, supposedly it's been renewed through to, I think 2020 or something I just saw. So it's supposedly hanging in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm glad it's been renewed. And speaking of renewed, it's kind of on the ropes. Sometimes we think, well, it might be Capaldi. A lot of people don't want to see the older Doctor. And I hear a lot of mixed opinions on him, despite the fact that I like him. But he is apparently coming back for Series 10.
Yay! That's great news.
Yeah.
He's terrific. I mean, I do hope that the next Doctor is... maybe goes back to what Moffat calls the boyfriend model, like the younger guy. Do you know what I mean? I that would be good for me to have someone that's got that kind of, that energy again. But for the time being, Capaldi's terrific. And I hope he stays on for forever.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm loving Capaldi, but like I've said, I think in the past many times, I like the Doctor. So really, I've not found one that I don't like, even in Classic Who, they're all kind of fun. I may not like all of the episodes that I've watched, just love them, but I don't love all of the episodes in the new series either. So it's just fun, and I just enjoy it. So I guess I kind of have a dog in the fight, but at the same time, I don't, you know?
Yeah, well, they cast really well. I'm curious if you've seen much Colin Baker, because if you're going to dislike anyone, it would probably be him. Mainly because he plays it so sort of deliberately dislikably. So yeah. maybe we should have a Colin Baker marathon and see how you get along with that.
All right. Well, before we get into Colin Baker marathons, we should probably talk about our writer and director this week. Peter Harness writes for us. We've seen him before with the 12th Doctor in the episode Kill the Moon.
Yeah, and he also wrote some of the Christmas ghost stories, which we're sort of spooling around to that time of year. And I recommend, Jeremy, all our listeners check out those BBC ghost stories. They made them in the 70s, and then they brought them back again a few years ago, and they're just massively creepy. So I think Harness is something of a horror writer. Kill the Moon, of course, was a pretty close approximation to Doctor Who doing horror as well. So,
well, you could say it was horrific. So,
the egg.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm still hung up on that. And there's an episode coming up in a couple of weeks called "Time to Wake Up" or something like that. Really hoping it's my dream theory coming true, but who knows? So, but yeah, that's Peter Harness. Our director this week is Daniel Netheim, or Netheim. Could be pronouncing it completely wrong. He does a lot of what looks like TV series and miniseries, including Humans and Jack Irish, which are some of his recent works. Jack Irish is actually something he's just completed and will be coming out next year.
And I think he directed some of the K-9 series, which is a fairly terrible piece of television. That's the guys that wrote K-9 in the 70s technically still own the rights to him, so they can do a spin-off if they want to.
Oh no.
And yeah, right, so it was Australian, a piece of like Australian TV that is, you know, it's got like a computer animated K-9 that sort of flies around and does all that stuff. So so this is not a director that I know, but I thought he did a good job. There was a lot I liked about that, the direction of this episode.
Yeah, for the most part, it did definitely kind of fill the role that we've seen so far be filled this year with a good direction. Even if we could question the last couple of seasons, the writing, the direction has been pretty solid. So.
Yeah, and visually, it just has been so on point. And this almost reminded me a bit, in terms of its sort of palette and sensibility, of the finales from last year with Capaldi, where you had, you know, the Death in Heaven and that sort of very dark, foreboding. Mm-hmm. There are lots of shots in this that really just felt true to me, like the way things were lit, the way that the council estates and things were shot, and the playgrounds. It sort of felt familiar and quite homely to me. So, yeah, great direction, I thought.
Yeah, speaking of some of the setting or playgrounds, you kind of mentioned there was a scene in this episode. Gosh, I found it on the internet when I Googled one of the towns that we'll discuss later, the one that the Doctor went to, which was something Stan. I can't remember the exact word.
Made up country of Stan.
Yes, yeah. Termizistan. But there's actually a picture floating around. Looks like a meme's already been created, but I think it's the town of Christmas from the time of the Doctor.
Oh, is it really the same location?
Yeah. they have a pair of pictures kind of one on top of each other, and the houses are the same. It's just one's kind of set with this Christmas and snow look, and the next is set in this kind of more run-down type of look, which is the episode we had. So, yeah, they used a bit of direction, but they gave us the same set. It was kind of fun.
Oh, I love all that. It's like when you see the same, like, costume that's been used throughout, like, 10 movies, you know? And it's like...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the, gosh, what's the name of that screen? The,
The Wilhelm scream.
Yes, yes. So we've seen it before.
Exactly.
And I butchered the scream. I'm sorry, guys.
No, that if you'd have not said what it was, I would have recognized it. So.
All right. Well, our actor/actress this week, I'm going to go ahead and bring her back up. It's Ingrid Oliver. I like Osgood. I was a fan of her before she got offed, even though she'd only been in one episode before that. She was just kind of a fun, lovable character, somebody who was a fan of the Doctor in the show. And I found out this week or this weekend, apparently she wasn't a fan. And our listener, Fred from Long Island, actually brings that up in his feedback. Fred mentioned that in one of the breaks that we've seen with her being interviewed, she wasn't a fan of Doctor Who before she filmed it. And then she finds out she has to play a fanboy of the Doctor, essentially. You know, this somebody who would be willing to wear all of these articles of clothing that previous Doctors have worn. I thought that was kind of an interesting twist to her.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. She's a comedian, so she... I don't know. I'd not really been exposed to her before Day of the Doctor. But she was just terrific in that. Like the Osgood character is so much fun. Fred also was asking about the Long Island Who convention, which is happening up in about 2 or 3 weeks time. I've not brought my tickets yet, but I do plan to be there if I can. Mm. So we should maybe get a small golden spiral meetup going up there if folks are available. It's the sort of the dull November days. So anything to fill it. And it's the guests look great. So unfortunately, Gemma Redgrave can't be there. She was originally going to be at that convention, and she's not. But she plays Kate Lethbridge-Stewart, who is one of my favorite characters in New Doctor Who. And that's Osgood's boss.
Yes.
And if anything, I like her more than Osgood. I don't know why, but I just think she's a terrific character. So.
Well, could you say she was one of your favorite characters? Oh, we'll get there in a bit. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
Ingrid Oliver, actress of the week, and... we'll probably get Kate next week. All right. Well, from here, let's just dive right into the episode discussion. We kind of start off this week with a very Men in Blackish peace treaty. You know, aliens living among us, and you have a unit who are the Men in Black in this particular scenario, kind of watching over this treaty, making sure people like pugs can that talk aren't necessarily observed by other people.
Yeah, it was a great callback to Day of the Doctor, which for me was one of the best Doctor Who's ever did. And I love seeing the clips and seeing Tennant and John Hurt again. And it was great to pick that up, because I thought that was one of the highlights of that episode was the peace treaty. Such a clever idea that you are going to make the perfect treaty if you're negotiating not knowing which side you're on. I absolutely love that. But now, a huge amount of Zygons involved. That was one thing that was surprising. That's quite a resettlement. That's a lot of Zygons.
Yeah, 20 million isn't something like a small colonization. That actually does sound like an invasion. So.
Yeah, and so there's a bunch of politics involved in that I think we'll get to. But you see the backstory of the treaty, and you see how Osgood and the other Osgood are kind of... I guess the torchbearers for that piece, and thus kind of explaining Osgood's death away, and how, I mean, I figured it would be something to do with the Zygon duplicate when you started to see the publicity pictures with her, but it was handled quite well, I thought. You know, and I was wondering exactly what the gimmick would be, and I'm pretty happy with the explanation as to why she's back.
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, we didn't really see a resolution of that. I'm surprised that the Zygon would go ahead and maintain that appearance, but they kind of explain that as well. And I bought that pretty solidly.
Yeah, I think it's like anything with television. It's like people talk about Russell T. Davis sometimes in terms of, well, he used a big red button or the reset button or the Deus Ex Machina too often. And I think it's okay to do that as long as there's a sort of emotional sincerity to it. And that's actually the surprising thing about Osgood, is that the sort of the rage and the grief that her sister feels at that death sort of fills the gap, you know, and makes it, okay, so that's okay. You know, we can have a kind of cutesy sci-fi explanation as to why she's still on screen, because that anger seems emotionally fulfilling somehow. So that to me helped paste over the cracks.
Yeah, it fulfilled kind of what we would hope as a viewer, just to kind of have the answers. And I don't know, we did get a few questions and another device that I think is going to come back next week, if I'm right, which is the Osgood box, and that might have some answers for us in a fashion like a Deus Ex Machina, something that might explain everything in the end. But do we know what's in the box already?
I think it's about time you say it.
Is it Clara's head?
Ooh. I got to tell you, it reminded me of the Osterhagen key from the Martha Stewart.
Yeah.
We can keep that in or cut
it out. We're going to be crafting something. I think we should keep that in. Sorry.
The companion that we didn't see on.
Yes.
The Martha Jones Osterhagen key. Like, it reminded me of that sort of like doomsday device that, mm-hmm. That could sort of scuttle the earth somehow. But yeah, I've no idea what that is, but I'm sure it's gonna play a pretty big role next week.
Yeah, I was actually wondering, since the doctor gave it to her, if it was what the naval surgeon, aka Harry Sullivan, gave or helped create, which was the Z-67, that nerve gas. I don't know if the doctor would even give that to somebody because it's a weapon, but for a nightmare scenario, he might. You know?
Yeah, that's a thought. I don't know. But it was fun seeing the two Osgoods on screen together. I liked that a lot. There was a line right at the start where they said, "Should we do this together?"
Yes.
And I'm not going to tell you where my mind was when that happened, but
I think that tells us where it was.
But then they say the Zygons are a peaceful race, and I thought, "No, they're not." That's a big fib.
Yeah, which is why we needed a peace treaty with them to begin with.
Exactly. But then we have that great cut to scene where it's what we now know as New Mexico, where Osgood is running to the police station,
mm-hmm.
and it has that wonderful like shaky cam shot that sort of just you sort of know things have really stepped up when you get that kind of
get the Jason Bourne effect. You get that, yeah,
exactly, yeah.
Things are hitting the fan over here in New Mexico.
Now was that filmed in New Mexico? Do we know?
I don't think so. And I'll get to that in a bit, but I called them, so.
You called New Mexico to ask?
I did. But yeah, so before we get to that wonderful New Mexican tidbit of me calling City Hall, let's dive into some twins real quick and try not to let your brain wander there. The doctor, we had these two Osgoods, and then we had these two identical twins, or similar twins. One looks shorter than the other. I got a kick out of that whole scene at the beginning of this episode. The doctor's chasing these two girls around this playground. He's talking to them like he's crazy. They're looking at him like he's crazy. And I'm kind of wondering, how's this going to turn out? Is he going to be crazy, or are they really these people that he's supposedly talking to?
Yeah, that was played really beautifully, because obviously they were setting him up to be the fool. And it was great that they were just actually were Zygons.
Yeah.
So
the payoff was really good.
And I love the whole kind of creepy playground thing. It was just a beautiful like panning shot across, and you see, you know, the TARDIS roof, and it cuts, and there's the doctor and looking all doctory. And I just, yeah, I really, it was one of those sort of moments where I thought I was almost envious of kids watching this today, which I sometimes get with the new show. But it was just one of those things you'll think back on. And when kids will see a playground, they'll think of that. You know, that's where the doctor goes now. So
yeah, so they'll be able to play at school, like, hey, I'm the doctor, and that sort of thing. Instead of chasing girls, as just normal people, they chase girls because they think they're the doctor. So
that one of those twins was significantly shorter than the other, though. You're quite right. But
I don't know why, because they look like the same girl. So maybe they were really sisters. I assume they were just the same girl playing the role twice, but one was shorter, so I ruled that out. But they end up getting abducted by another Zygon. You have this kind of red gas. The doctor panics, and then they're taken away, where we find out later in the episode that they're executed. And I'm thinking, well, why are they being executed? Wouldn't they possess intelligence that you would want as commanders of Zygon civilization?
Well, they're fanatics. I think that's the thing, isn't it? That there's no sort of logic to it.
Yeah.
But it was... It was you know, quite a creepy scene seeing sort of the Zygons just sort of glimpse through the red smoke, you know, and have mm-hmm. them. I actually, those costumes have not changed that much from back in the 70s, and it shows what a strong piece of design it is, because they're basically unchanged, and they are really sinister. I remember watching Day of the Doctor in the theater and almost having a little bit of the fear factor when the Zygons were on screen. They are kind of intense. And when Osgood's hiding under the desk also, they are kind of frightening. And as grown-ups, we're supposed to not be frightened by this program, but occasionally it hits a nerve, I think. And the Zygons definitely do it.
Yeah. So where are the other 19.99999 million Zygons? You know, we've kind of seen a handful of the radicalized, but why aren't the other Zygons coming in to prevent these radical ones from creating this supposed nightmare scenario?
That's a great question, and I wonder if they'll talk about that next week, because it's such a huge body of people. And then if you think if they are all staging out of the UK, that's like half the country, which would explain a lot now I think about it.
Yeah, it's... Never mind, we're not going to go there.
No, I was just going to say the greengrocer where I grew up.
Yeah.
I got to tell you.
But so we kind of have these questions that are coming up regarding these Zygons and what their ultimate goal is going to be. Some men just want to watch the world burn, and I'm pretty sure that applies to Zygons as well.
Yeah, exactly. And they use the word radicalization round about this point of the episode, and that's where I feel like they kind of stake their they put the flag into the ground and say, yeah, we're actually talking about this. It's a huge question in Britain, integration with other cultures and radicalization within those cultures that exist there, and they did not pull their punches in this episode. I'm curious from your side of the pond, Jeremy, what you thought about that kind of message.
Yeah, I probably come from what some would call the radical side, because many of our listeners would know where I sit, but I do have a lot of crazy opinions, and I'm not that crazy, but I don't know. I thought it was also interesting with the timing of what's going on in Germany with a lot of the refugees as well, but they've planned this episode before any of that happened, so I didn't think that was a statement being made there. But I think I don't know if my opinions really need to be put on air, but I'm definitely kind of a nationalist, I guess you could say.
Well, I mean, I think that what's interesting, and we're not going to make it too much of a heavy show, but you can't not talk about this, at least for a moment, is that supposedly Moffat had his hand slapped pretty severely for the storyline at the end of Death in Heaven. With the kid that gets shot, suicide bomber. Yeah. Right. And supposedly that was reshot and rewritten and reshot at the request of the BBC, because they just felt it was too much for primetime TV. And it's really interesting that Moffat's come back even harder in a way and is addressing politics, maybe in a slightly more oblique way, but, you know, it's a pretty tricky space to be in, and I don't know if there's been much blowback from the press over there or what that would be. I suppose they, as much as they're talking about an issue, they are kind of sitting on the fence as well, at least in this first episode.
Yeah, they haven't made a statement either way, and I think with the Zygon inversion, which is the name of last week, we're gonna see an inversion. We're gonna see something happen there, and that might be a way that they deal with that topic, and it'll be interesting to see if they want to take it, which direction they end up wanting to take it. But I don't know. There's a lot of ways it could go, and I'm really kind of avoiding trying to get too political with Doctor Who, simply because I know politics in Britain and politics in the United States are completely different. At least where I sit in the United States and where Britain sits. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember when The Unquiet Dead came out, which was the third episode of Doctor Who, when it came back, which was Eccleston. There was a lot of discussion. Do you remember that one? It was set in Victorian England, and the Gelf, or I forget the name of the race, came and were inhabiting dead bodies.
Okay, yeah.
Do you remember that? It was in Victorian, you know, Charles Dickens was there.
Yeah.
There was a lot of discussion about the subtext of that, actually, and immigration was the supposed subtext. So I remember that debate happening 10 years ago. So I don't know. It's interesting stuff. I'm pretty proud of my little show that it's going there. Mm-hmm. But
Yeah, it's definitely kind of a step to take, and we've seen it in other episodes of other TV shows. I think my favorite show of all time was Battlestar Galactica. They dealt a lot with what they thought was important at the time, too. So I may or may not disagree with any of what they're actually saying, but it does make for interesting drama on TV. I think a lot of the times it can make a powerful message. So speaking of powerful messages, 127 missed calls for Clara.
That's kind of spooky, isn't it? When
yeah, I call my wife a lot when I'm worried about her, but 127 is just a little over the line.
So what is this disco doctor thing?
I think it was the glasses, but that was awesome.
I just had my 13th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And the lovely Mrs. Ward did buy me the Ray-Bans that yeah.
So, I'm going to need a picture of that too.
Yes, we'll take care of that. Yeah. Right. So those are my Sonic glasses. But yeah, so it's a funny inversion that the doctor is calling Clara that many times, because normally everyone's trying to reach the doctor and he's off somewhere exotic,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I thought the same thing.
I have to wonder about the name of Truth or Consequences as a town.
It's real.
It's real, but it's not, I mean, it wasn't a very cryptic clue, was it? Were they trying to take people there? Were the Zygons trying to drop a massive hint? Because that's so, like, if you just Googled it, anyone had Googled
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I think they were actually trying to drop a massive hint. I think that, honestly, I think they were trying to pull somebody away from London that was involved in UNIT, aka Kate, and take her out, that kind of thing. I think it was kind of a setup. They knew that if they could lure somebody into it, they could subdue that person in a likely capability. I don't know why they would think nobody would come along with them. We kind of see this, you have reinforcements thing, and I'll get into that at the end of this episode of Don't Blink. But I think that, you know, you're getting somebody alone or somebody in limited numbers, you can outmatch them, you can take them on. So it definitely is kind of a question that, yeah, why would you be somewhere so obvious? But I think that's ultimately why.
I mean, in a pre-Google age, it would make sense.
Yeah. Well, and you got to think that Clara, and I'm getting ahead of the reveal in this episode, but the person who supposedly has this Trivial Pursuit knowledge is a Zygon and tells them where to go. That screams trap.
That is true, isn't it? You're quite right, yeah. So, but then they should have made it more oblique, anyway.
Yeah. Well, maybe they should have, but the town is pretty small. I did some research on it, and I went to, I think it was TORC or something. Torque is kind of what they go by. But Truth or Consequences, their governmental webpage. I honestly can't remember the name of it, but it was, I should, because it was pretty easy. But they're kind of a spa town, a resort town. And they used to be Hot Springs, New Mexico, apparently like 70 years ago or 80 years ago. And there was a TV show, I can't remember the host's name, but he's like, first town that changes their name to Truth or Consequences, because that was the name of his NBC radio program. First town that changes it, I'll come and visit. And so he ended up visiting, I think, for the next 50 years, according to Wikipedia. And every May, they have their little town days, like they call it Fiesta. The Fiesta Days or something like that, which my town that I live in is probably about the same size as them, maybe a little bit larger, but we have something called Western Days, and it's a very, we'll bring in the history of our area. Well, I think they kind of do that for themselves, but the host of that rodeo program visited for the next 50 years. I guess good for his word. So kind of made a little bit of big hullabaloo for 6,000 people, but who knows? It's kind of an interesting little bit about them. They're also located about 30 miles away from that spaceport that Virgin Galactic is using, and about like 150 miles from El Paso. They're South New Mexico. So yeah, definitely a real town. I called them today asking them if the sheriff's department wears green, white, and red flags for their badges or anything like that. Crazy on the other end of the line probably, or the lady on the other end of the line probably thought I was crazy, which was right.
Wait, you actually called them today?
I did.
That's great.
I had to wait till Monday to call them.
That's the kind of thing I would do. That's brilliant. Yes.
I went a little overboard, but I was sweating, you know, on the other end of the line. I'm on the phone. Hey, I've got a stupid question, but can you answer this? Because the green, white, and red flag, that's kind of this Mexican flag. I say kind of. I think it is the Mexican flag, but it has an eagle on it for Mexico.
When you called them, did the person on the other end of the phone say, "This question is insignificant"?
If she had, I would have been really, really excited. But she didn't. I mentioned it was because of a Doctor Who episode that I was curious. Because it really bothers me. I want to know, do British people actually think New Mexico is in Mexico or something?
Yeah, you know, I think that was it. Honestly, I think...
Because that could be it. They have this "Welcome to New Mexico, USA" or whatever, and they very clear the letters at the bottom of the screen. But this sheriff, who's this doppelganger we find out later, is wearing this emblem on the top right of her body, and she has this what looks like a Mexican flag. And I'm like, I don't think that they would be wearing that. Yeah, they may be 150 miles away from El Paso, but they're not El Paso. So I was a little kind of not perturbed, but curious as to why that was something that she was wearing and not like, you know, maybe say an American flag.
I caught that too. And all I can say is it is some way better than where we were a few years ago, which was, do you remember the, it was when the Master takes over with the Toclafane and.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And they had some scenes that were supposedly set in a dorm in America. And they had like the triangular like pendant flag on the wall, like the yeah. like the yeah, and guys in like 1980s football jackets, like with yeah. crew cuts, and like yeah. every other cultural cliche possible.
Yeah,
this is just a misunderstanding. Okay. Geographically, I think.
I hope you're definitely right.
Well, you know, first of all, I love that we have a line of communication open with the town of Truth or Consequences on Don't Blink. And I moved to you, Jeremy, that we actually try and get someone on Skype for next week.
Get an interview, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I might call her back tomorrow. Hey, would you like to interview for us next week?
Yeah, do it. There's a British guy who wants to apologize on behalf of his people. Also, another thing I noticed is that behind the... Like, one of the pieces of set dressing was a wall of police badges. So you know how policemen, like, they all trade, like, their badges if they're traveling?
Right, but they were all from London?
No. Well, the most obvious one is from Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Because the cops have a witch on their badge. I'm actually looking at one right now as I speak. Because I brought one when I was in Salem a few years ago, and I framed it. Mm. So I couldn't take my eyes off this this Salem badge that's there. So
that's good to know. At least they got an American sheriff's badge.
Well, exactly, yeah. But I thought it's sort of one of those things. You know, you if you live outside a country, you don't realize. But it's like when Hannibal used to shoot Baltimore in Canada, and you can just tell it's not Baltimore. And like if you've ever been to New Mexico, it's in a really interesting place. I have some relatives in Albuquerque. And wherever they shot this looks a bit like it, but not really. Like, towns are very singular, so I don't know. It was maybe we should actually get a picture of the Truth or Consequences police station and see what it really looks like.
Yeah, I didn't request a copy of that, but I did see a picture of the city hall, and it was, I don't know what I would expect to find in New Mexico, just kind of that adobe style, a lot of arches in the front. It looked pretty good to me. They are having a bill, kind of a power, can't pay your bills, I think, on the 17th of November, like the 10th, 17th. That was on their city hall page. But other than that, yeah, really nice town. But they exist. Termitistan was something that apparently doesn't exist. And we kind of mentioned that earlier. It looks like it's the same place on Trenzalore. And I ended up Googling the name, and somebody has already created a country pretty much during the episode of Doctor Who, when this originally aired, on a website called nationstates.net. I cannot vouch for what that that page is, but it appears to be like an online, you know, I rule a nation kind of a simulation game. And it looks more text-based rather than what you'd find in like a phone app or something. But you can set your nation up however you want. And the dude who set it up 2 days ago. So
that's funny.
I thought it was great.
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't with those kind of things. So if you make up a fake, like, name of a sort of, you know, Middle Eastern nation, you basically, it's Austin Powers, isn't it? Like, so, like, it's yeah, inadvertently funny.
Yeah.
But then you can go the other way and it would be like Living Daylights, which is, you know, the Timothy Dalton Bond movie, where they do, they film it in Afghanistan. It's set in Afghanistan and the heroes were the Taliban. Like, literally, if you watch it, it's like the brave freedom fighters.
Yeah. Well, and that movie was coming out, I think, when Russia was fighting them. So
exactly. Yeah. So what do you do? But I personally just could not, as a writer, like, type in a fake country name. Like, yeah. I would just make me cringe. I don't know what you would do, but.
Well, it's not fake anymore. It exists in at least somebody's imagination. So
what we need to do is we need to declare war on the town of Truth or Consequences.
Yes.
On behalf of the people of Tamazistan.
Yeah. The rest of us should all get a nation states accounts and then just destroy this guy. But no, he actually had in his motto Truth or Consequences. And at first I didn't think it was a fake site. Then I saw that and I was like, yeah, it's definitely fake. That's too convenient. So,
I mean, okay, let's also, having talked, maybe I should send the people of the Sheriff's Department in Truth or Consequences my Salem, Massachusetts police badge.
So they'll really have a badge on their wall.
So they'll really have one and have them send us.
There you go.
So we can, Don't Blink can have some Truth or Consequences police swag.
Hey, that sounds like a good idea. Their contact information is on Google. And, speaking of contact information, we have lots of contacts with drones flying over. I think they're flying over the doctor's destination, which was Imanistan or Turkmenistan or pick one, Istan. And the doctor shows up at this drone camp or whatever. They have this singular pilot or maybe there was a partner somewhere in that tent, flying drone. And apparently going to bomb. You kind of see them loading the bombs on a drone outside before he goes in the tent and sees. But I thought, you know, that camera is pretty freaking amazing. It can zoom all the way in to have such good detail from that distance on, it's your family you're going to bomb, right?
Zoom in and enhance. It's just like, oh, yeah.
We're there again.
Exactly. Well, I wasn't quite clear why the doctor decided to fly. Like, why not take the time?
Yeah, it's quicker.
But, it's a lot quicker, yeah.
I don't know. He wants to be president of the world. I was surprised that he took this small, tiny plane. And, you know, I'm like, if I'm the president of the world, I want freaking state-of-the-art, not something that was invented in 1960.
Yeah, you take the Valiant, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Well, it didn't, but that crashed, though, didn't it? I suppose that was the thing. They did, Missy did wipe out. So all I had left was a little commuter thing that they...
Dang it, Missy. Whatever. You know, I'd probably even take a Learjet. It looks sleeker. It's got that sexy look. But no, he takes this airliner that just doesn't look any good. But they probably had it available. Stock photos, that type of thing.
That's right, exactly. Now, we should also talk about the commander, because she was played by an actress called Rebecca Front. And we talked about the first guy to die in Before the Flood and how he was an actor in a sketch show called the Fast Show. And he's just one of those people, you look at him and you just want to laugh because he's a very, very funny comic actor. Well, Rebecca Front is the same. Like, she is hilariously funny. And she was in the thick of it with Peter Capaldi. In fact, this is kind of a torturous piece of logic, but the Omni rumor is the rumor of a recovery of 90 missing Doctor Who episodes.
Okay.
Which is sort of constantly buzzing in the background on the message board. I named the Omni rumor. I have the infamy of doing so. And that's a reference to her character in The Thick of It. And Peter Capaldi refers to her as an Omni shambles. He says, you're not just a shambles, you're an Omni shambles. It's wonderful. So these two have worked together before, and seeing her play like a straight faced sort of military figure is hilarious. Like, if you know her, it's like she does it well, but it's just, I keep waiting for it to like crack a smile, you know?
Yeah. So Omni rumors aside, we have rumors and rumors of wars. So when the doctor shows up at the drone camp and he goes into the tent, you have this woman who's going to bomb this village with her family, apparently, and she's kind of having these things. Did anybody else think of Darth Vader coming in Red October and going, I was never here, and detonating the torpedo.
Darth Vader was in The Hunt for Red October?
Yes. At least James Earl Jones was. It counts.
That's right. I haven't seen that movie for a while, but no, I mean, no, you might be right.
I thought he was going to come in as the doctor, a.k.a. the president of the world, and go, I'm detonating the UAV, and I was never here.
I actually, honestly, I will tell you that church scene, I think, is one of the best things they have ever done in New Doctor Who. With the mum comes out.
Okay.
Like, what a scene. Like, it's horrible. Because it was so well played, that soldier. And it said so many things about the world that we live in, and I don't know.
I'd have probably shot her.
Or...
I love my mom, but I know I'm in a sci-fi scene, so I'm pulling the trigger.
I mean, I've never thought to ask, but does your mom listen to Don't Blink?
No, she doesn't, but if she does, I love you. But the...
I'd have just shot her.
Yeah, well, I would have. I mean, she can't tell me what's the basic question he asks her, and she's like, I don't know. And it's like, okay, I'm pulling the trigger at this point, because the world's safety is more than your fake life, because I know mom, you know, she's back in the UK. But Fred from Long Island, in his feedback, also mentioned how his reluctance didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, and how I think he kind of would line up with me with the whole thought of, yeah, it'd be tragic if she really was your mom, but she's not, so shoot her.
Jeez.
So... I don't know.
Remind me not to get on your bad side.
Hey, as long as you're not an alien, you're okay, man.
I don't know what I am.
Yeah.
I mean, legally, I am an alien, come to think of it.
Yeah, but you're a legal alien. Maybe.
Well, yeah, I am, but yeah, that's...
We're okay with you. The MIB allows you in the United States, you're okay.
That's right, yeah. So you didn't find that scene even slightly traumatic. You were sat there thinking, shooter.
Yes, the whole time. Shooter! Yeah.
I mean, you know when the door kind of creaks open and the mum kind of starts to peek out.
Yeah, you know, like, it's going to happen. All the soldiers are going to die and all the Zygons are going to get away. Which is what happened, right?
Which is what happens, yeah. They all get turned into burning hair. Electric wings. So,
I guess their little evaporation rays or whatever. Oh, wow, they're not even evaporation. Whatever. I guess they can't actually deal with human hair or something.
Ooh.
Because there's always piles of hair.
Yeah,
that's kind of weird.
That's new. The Zygons never had that sort of power to kill with their hands. But you know,
it's it'll work. It'll do.
It'll work. Yeah.
So, but yeah, we get this doctor who's afraid. You know, I'm thinking maybe he's not afraid, but I'm thinking kind of in this scene before the church, why doesn't he go with them? You know, like he does in almost every other scene of Doctor Who, when he's with a group of people, he tries to talk to them before something happens. No, in this one, he decides to go back with Walsh and hide behind the church or wherever they're at.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, normally he would be up front and he'd be like, yeah, put your guns down, I'll talk to him. Like, no, he didn't let it happen, but he's out of the... I think he's probably keeping his eye on her. I think he thinks that maybe she is the most dangerous sort of faction in that interaction, but...
Yeah, she has the command ability. But, you know, if he's there, he can hold them off or something, too. I mean, we've seen things like that take place in the past. We saw his effort to do it with the Vikings a couple weeks ago, where he's just in the thick of it. He's trying to take control of the situation, that sort of thing. So I don't know why he decided to go out back, but
well, he needs to get the device that goes bing again. Remember that? The Zygon detector that sometimes works.
Yeah, but not always, because he ends up snogging one
and threatening a rabbit.
Yes, but You have the soldiers kind of getting killed, They get vaporized. The doctor and Walsh make it in the back door and a trophy. Hey, let's shoot the lock with whatever is available. And they get in and they hear Osgood kind of screaming for help, or a voice screaming for help. You don't know it's Osgood, but you kind of think it might be Osgood. But the doctor kind of, I don't know, prancing about on the floor, banging on the floor, doing whatever he was doing. I thought that was kind of fun. But he finds Osgood, and I'm thinking, in the words of Admiral Akbar, it's a trap!
Well, first of all, I think, did you see the Mythbusters where they did the shooting a lock thing? You can't actually do that.
Right. A couple rounds might disable it. one's not really going to do a whole lot from the distance they were doing it. Yeah. I mean, can you shoot a lock? Yeah, if you put enough into it, probably. They have breech shotguns, but I think the whole point is to dislodge the rest of the door from the lock, not the lock from the hole that it's in.
Exactly. And I like that they go into that room and there's the most literal map you've ever seen with big red and like green blocks on it.
I was trying to figure out what the map was of. Did you notice?
I don't know, honestly.
Okay. Because they had like three or four factions. It looked like a Risk map. I mean, it just, you had like red, yes, blue, yellow, green, and they're all on the board. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. This is a very battle type of map, but you're not in a battle right now. So maybe they're planning for next week. I don't know. But it definitely had this trope of here's a map that we're plotting something on. And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, gosh, the episode that I watched of Classic Who, can't remember the name, but it was the Daleks when they're fighting each other.
Oh, Genesis.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they have a map of here's our base and here's their base. It was very similar to that look.
Or it's, you know what always reminds me of is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Okay.
When they go in the castle and they find a secret fireplace and there's a bunch of like Fraulein's pushing like blocks across a map of Europe on a long stick.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did that in a past life. I just pushed models of...
That was your job.
That was my job, yeah.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a rewarding military career.
That's right, yeah.
Somebody's got to do it, though.
Someone's got to do it.
Not knocking the military. Hey, we love you guys. But I wouldn't want to be the dude who's pushing blocks around.
I mean, do they still do that? Is that still...
I have no idea. I play video games, so I'm not sure what anything happens. We could be still using muskets for all I know.
Incidentally, how did you enjoy last week's episode? What was your host rating for The Woman Who Lived?
I think I gave it a 9.
A 9? Okay. Mm-hmm.
It kind of completed that for me.
Good. I just caught up on it yesterday, and I found it a confusing watch, but I quite liked it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but the Doctor does his sort of stampy round thing and finds Osgood sort of handcuffed and waiting to be rescued in the basement.
Yeah, it was very convenient, and since we know the Zygons are radicalized, maybe she's radicalized, maybe Zygon copied another Zygon, and that's why we have another Osgood. I mean, really, you've created a device in the TV show now to be able to never get rid of another human being ever alive, because, well, we'll bring them back in another couple of episodes, because, yeah, that was the Zygon that died. So is Clara really going to go away at the end of this season? Is it a Zygon or is it Clara? She was copied at one point. Was she copied again? Right?
Yeah, he just can't make up his mind is the problem with killing characters. You know, you need to commit.
Yeah, I agree. Just kill them both at the same time. Resolve the question. But, we have this kind of this realization of Osgood being rescued. We have the Doctor asking this question that I thought was very curious. Because he's answered it earlier in the episode of which one are you? And I don't know if he was on the plane when he asked it, but I think he asked it multiple times. But she kind of makes the comment that I'm neither, I'm both, I'm a hybrid. And oh, there's that word again.
Yep. Yeah, I caught that too. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the sort of the arc of this season is the hybrid thing.
Yeah.
And we had like maybe three different possibilities of what that's going to be, haven't we? Like we had Clara and the Dalek.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget the first one, but
we had the one and the girl who died being a hybrid with the immortal. And then now we have this hybrid with the Zygon. So we've had two back to back. We had the Magician's Apprentice and the Witch's Familiar. There was a hybrid in that. We had the girl who died and the woman who lived. There was a duplicate in that. Now we have the Zygon invasion. I need to go back and see if there was one in Under the Lake and Before the Flood, because there's probably going to be a duplicate in that.
And I think there was. Actually, yeah, I'm fairly sure there was.
Yeah.
So they're taking us somewhere for sure.
Yeah. So we'll see. There's five more episodes this season, but each episode, if you look, the first two were Hedy McDonald. The second two, so 3 and 4, were Daniel O'Hara directing. The Girl Who Died, The Woman Who Lived was Ed Bazalgette. Zygon Invasion and Inversion are Daniel Nethim. Sleep No More and the next one are Justin Malotnikov. And then the last two are Rachel Talalay. So each episode is directed by, or each pair of episodes is directed by a different director. So they're definitely pairing things off this year, and they could be bringing in the same thing with some form of hybrid in every episode. So yeah, they're definitely sending us a message. We should definitely be getting it by now. If we're not getting it, we're missing something.
Mm, yeah. I'm curious to see what comes back later in the series too. I mean, I'm sure Missy is going to come back with a vengeance.
Oh yeah.
And
she'll be heaven sent, I'm sure.
Ba-dum-tsh. So we have Lethbridge Stewart, though, is in trouble over in New Mexico. And we've been making a bit of fun of the tropes here, but did anyone not get that cop?
Yeah.
Was going to be a Zygon.
No, it's the only person in a village or a town or whatever they called it. Yeah, definitely a Zygon. You know, she had a really nice, I think it was a Beretta. She points it at Stuart and Martha Stuart, and just for you.
Thank you.
And we get this, I don't know, this tense scene. She like, there are no reinforcements. And, you know, the moment she says that is like, okay, she's definitely not Kate, but the sheriff or whatever is definitely a Zygon, because you keep bringing up the fact that you're alone, which means in TV land, you're alone and nobody's coming to help you. She's a bad guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a completely classic trope. And, I enjoyed the complexity of this, that obviously the Zygons are genuinely quite angry about some of the things that have happened, and that she shows Lethbridge Stewart around the trash cans with the burning things in. Mm-hmm. Does seem to be a sort of slightly weirdly sadistic thing to do.
Yeah. This is what I'm going to do to you. That kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it was a good bit of horror. You know, like it's a pretty creepy situation to be in. Again, the Zygons are very intimidating. And although they do that weird sort of slightly off camera transformation. So you don't, right. It's like, we just saved £30,000 by doing that.
Who needs CGI? We'll just blank the screen out real quick, which honestly, I'd rather them do that than have a really terrible looking CGI.
Well, actually, it's funny because in the original Zygon stories, the transformation worked really well for like a sort of slightly naff 70s effect. Mm. But I can see how they were like, well, let's just move the camera left to go to the Lethbridge Stewart and then back to where we were.
Yeah. So do you think that Stewart has actually been taken advantage of and /killed/ incapacitated, or do you think she was smart enough to also see that this was not somebody she wanted to let her guard down around, and the person making the call saying they were neutralized was actually Stewart trying to take her off her trail?
Yeah, that's such a Moffat like second episode twist to play. Yeah. is guess what, I'm in charge of this. So there were so many little like nods to Day of the Doctor, and it's a strange thing for me to say, but I noticed the way that Clara keyed in on, there's a keypad. Do you remember when she like has to put the password in?
Right.
And she did it in exactly the same way that Clara did in Day of the Doctor, when she's tapping on the wrist transporter. Do you remember when she puts the secret code in that's been scratched on the wall?
Okay.
And it's like one of those like see her moments where she's figured out the secret code to use the vortex manipulator and types it in this kind of like bye. See a Zygon's kind of way. And so that got me thinking about Clara. I'm like, what, maybe there's been a switcheroo with Clara even, but I think with Lethbridge Stewart, yeah, she probably killed that Zygon, and now she's, yeah, it's the real one. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm thinking Kate might have gotten it. Claire is not going to have done that, because we see her get taken. We actually see her get taken, and then she fires a stinger or whatever that missile was at the airliner. Kate, we don't get C removed. We just get this assumption. So that's telling me that she's not actually not Kate. She is Kate. But yeah, Clara made a few errors that made me kind of question throughout this episode. Well, that was stupid. Like one, she's in the tunnel after they go down the elevator the first time, her and Jack, and she's shining her phone cell phone light at these, the takers, the kidnappers, the body snatchers, whatever you want to call them. She's shining her light down the tunnel at them. Well, there goes your operational security, dude, because they can see the light. So
Yeah, even Osgood, actually, at the start, on her cell phone when the Zygon's looking for her, you know, like, just wait till it's gone. You know, it might be safer. I don't know.
But I don't know. So it kind of made me think, well, maybe that's not really Clara. And she did a couple of other things that kind of needed to be explained away, and they ultimately were. You know, it's like, if she was really not Clara, then she wouldn't have a need to be scared. So they go down this tunnel after finding this nasty thing in the elevator behind the buttons that weren't really buttons. And you have Jack go, ah, don't do that. And Clara does it anyway. So we have this, I don't know, this moment of wondering what's going to happen. And then we come back and Clara has brought, or Bonnie has brought, Jack and a good bit of troops to their demise.
Yeah. Unit gets through some bodies in this one, doesn't it? Like, yes. They and I suppose it was one of those sort of hidden in plain sight things that I got, you know, watching this, that it's like, you know, don't Zygons clone people? Like, so when they go into the pods, I'm like, okay, right. Obviously. But it was interesting. I quite enjoyed it. It set up an interesting cliffhanger for next week. So I'm definitely interested to see who's real and who's a clone.
Right. There are a lot of questions from people that I've seen. Is Clara dead? Is this the end of Clara? I don't think this is the end of Clara, because it's very unceremonious. I mean, it's just, I don't know, she was taken and then she's gone. That kind of thing. Too easy. Like I've said in the past, they're going to have to give her a bigger out, I think, to be her finale. But
yeah. Yeah, there are lots of rumors about next week that have been sort of bubbling out under for a long time. So I'm curious to see where it goes. And it feels like this whole season's been somewhat under wraps. Like, normally you get a sense of what's going to happen and when. But I think this year, I've got no roadmap as to what's going to be the content of the episode. So, you know, maybe if something horrible does happen to Clara next week, I wouldn't be all that surprised.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if she went away next week, but some people seem to think that the character is done, and I don't know if she's quite done just yet. They're going to have to bring her back from her unconsciousness and then maybe remove her. But I don't know. I think she'll make it at least to episode 9, but that's just my guess. So we'll see how that kind of resolves, but I could be wrong. I know that I think, like I've said in the past, I think she's going to bite it, but it's just, it doesn't feel like it's time yet.
Yeah, I my gut says they're going to try and sting us and do it sooner rather than later, but we'll see.
All right.
We'll see.
Definitely see. So I'm going to probably cry after that episode. I like Clara. She's no Amy Pond, but I love her. And I like her little theme song, too. It's cute.
Yeah, right.
So we kind of get, speaking of Clara, this resolution in this episode, we get Bonnie, not Clara, calling the doctor, telling him that Clara and Kate are dead, which I don't believe for a second. And then she fires her missile at the doctor's plane, who's like, oh, I'm okay. He's all kind of confident, you know, that very, he assumes he's going to win kind of statement. And then you get this to be continued.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think there's a lot of misdirection going on in this cliffhanger. I think that there's probably, you know, some kind of force shield or something that he knows is in the plane.
Right, like the TARDIS is on the plane and it's going to protect them or something.
Exactly. Well, you didn't think I'd fly this across without, you know, one of those sort of moments. And I think that, as you say, quite possibly Lethbridge Stewart is the real one too. So, but you know, it's. I think that it's a bigger story to tell, and I think next week's going to be fairly epic. So I'm about as excited for the next Doctor as I've been in a long time.
Yeah, I'm definitely kind of pumped. I want to see where it's going to go, and I don't know. I want to be proven right, because I don't want Clara to go just yet. But I don't know, if she is taken out, then I'll be happy with that as well, because we know she's leaving. I think they did an interview with Moffat, which is where we got the conversation on Capaldi being back in the 10th season. He's going nowhere, that type of thing. And some people are like, well, he's going nowhere because he's not going to be back. And I'm thinking, well, no, he'll be back. They're trying to read more into what Moffat said. But Moffat, before he said Capaldi wasn't going anywhere, was, well, we know Clara is leaving this season. Whether or not that's just all misleading or not, I don't know. But I don't think they would make that announcement.
Yeah, we'll certainly see. I do like that they're not doing next time trailers for every episode. I think that's fun.
because I accidentally didn't pause it, and I was relieved to see whatever that medieval type of movie or show coming on afterwards. I'm like, whoo, dodged that one.
Yeah.
Because last week I accidentally caught like the first, you know, 5 seconds of the trailer, and I knew Osgood was featured in that. And I was like, oh, great, something's happening. So I was already tipped off what was going on. I knew the Zygons would be back. Osgood was there. So I kind of knew what was coming.
Yeah. And they used to do one for every single episode. And there were some, just sometimes you couldn't help but spoil it. So I like that occasionally they go dark on you. So I'm enjoying that a lot.
Well, can you think of any Classic Who homework for us this week? We did The Visitation last week, which dealt with the Great Fire of London. It was interesting. I'm not going to give it a 9, but I thought it was a solid 7 of an episode.
Yeah, I forget if we've done this previously, but I think the obvious one is Terror of the Zygons, which is the only time in the classic series you see the Zygons. It's a wonderful Tom Baker episode. He's at the height of his powers in that wonderful sort of Sarah Jane era, and it's filmed on location, and it looks terrific. The Zygons are great monsters, and it also, if I remember correctly, has music by one of the guys that did the music for the Christmas Ghost Stories in their original run. So they're very, very spooky. And just shows you what you can do with not much money if you really are prepared to push a few boundaries. So wonderful piece of TV. I'm not sure if it's on Netflix streaming, but treat yourself, buy Terror of the Zygons on DVD. I think there's a double disc that they've put out. And Harry Sullivan's in it, the surgeon. Mm-hmm. Just extraordinary TV. That's the stuff that I love most about classic Doctor Who. So treat yourself and pick that up and get ready for next week.
Yeah. And you can leave your feedback for us. Our deadline for feedback is typically going to be Mondays at around 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. But you can leave that feedback via phone at 304-837-2278, or you can visit goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And there are multiple ways on the website to submit your feedback via voice or via text. You can also reach us at Rogue Oracle, Oracle with two R's, and at GSM Podcasts, or at facebook.com/goldenspiralmedia.
Yeah, and if you're listening and you haven't given us any feedback yet, you haven't like joined the discussion, please do. We want to hear from you. So now is the time. First-time callers, please contact us, and we want to hear what you think about the show, about Don't Blink, and about where Doctor Who's going. So please join the conversation. We want to talk with you.
Indeed. And until next time, work on your Amazing Grace riffs on the electric guitar, because that was a pretty epic moment this week as well. So have a good week, guys.
I am the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission by Silver Screen Records. They're composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster, taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.